Chapter 13.
Alanor, Gorkogrod. The second invasion of Ulanor began with a sacrifice. A shower of meteors marked the offering. Fireballs, some hundreds of meters across, burned through the upper atmosphere and blasted against Gorkogrod's brute shields in a blaze of elemental color. Some of them were recognizable as void ship remnants. The Dark Angel's cruiser, Herald of Night, the Navy frigate, Cyzicus, the Inquisitorial escort, Perseus Banshee. Skeleton crews, crippled ships, but losses keenly felt. Sacrifices painfully offered. But they were willing, and they had fulfilled their role. Penitent Roth descended hard through a web of metal plankways and scaffold-like flak towers. Glowing crossfire stitched across her hull and over her dorsal cannon. Combat thrusters burned white from driving evasive maneuvers through a terminal descent. A black-painted gunship of the Aurora chapter, Lance of Ultima, lost a tailwing to a torrent of flak and crashed through the flat, oxide-red roof of an orc block, where it exploded. Another was eviscerated mid-air, spilling space marines and crew over the abyssal drop like chaff dropped from the belly of a fighter craft. Like planetary reformations in miniature, segmented metal shutters were clunking up to reveal secondary fire points, huge barreled guns emerging from riveted walls and scaffolds and cranking into position. The opening phase of the first invasion of Ulanor had been quiet, characterized by Imperial circumspection and orcish cunning. Not this time. The Imperium knew now what surprises the orcs had in store and where they were hidden. And the orcs knew that they had no reason to hold back. A Blood Angel's gunship met a cloudburst of fragmentation rockets and autofire and disintegrated as though it had been driven through a wall. With no ordinary skill on the part of Aetherias, the pilot, Penitent Roth dropped between the crisscrossing lines of fire and responded in kind. Heavy bolters strafed the gun ports, hammering on the hardened metal, las cannons punching through as the Thunderhawk pivoted around her center and dropped landing struts. Retro thrusters fired, scorching the metallic surface beneath and bringing the gunship shuddering to a hover. 2 meters off the ground, turbofans howling with vertical strain, her assault hatch whined open and Kjarvik Stormcrow finally felt his boots on the ground of Ulanor. He took a deep breath of the burned, carcinogenic air. He had missed the last invasion, fighting back the greenskins in the Segmentum Obscura under the fell-handed. He would not be so unlucky again. The polluted sky was ashen and thick, riven by fire. It was raining metal, crumpled casings and bits of aircraft pattering down over the circular iron platform onto which Stormcrow and his kill team swiftly deployed. It was some kind of landing pad, large enough to accept one of the big twin-rotor orc copters or a supply boat. 3 ramps ran off from it, only a line of barbed wire spikes that flexed in the turbofan outwash between them and a stupefying fall. 1, each to the left and right, led down towards partially fortress-fronted shacks. The 3rd ramp was twice as long, slightly wider, and wobbled upwards to the primary objective. Tactica savants had designated it a collapsor beam for reasons that Kjarvik did not need explaining. It was a lumpen bristling of defensive ironwork surmounted by a towering edifice of suspensor rods and power transfer coils. An enormous cannon, longer again than its entire housing, pointed belligerently up at the sky. Entrance was via a set of heavy red doors plastered with glyphs. A great bar had been set up across them, spiked, wired in, and sparking with alternating current. With a burst of propellant, twin missiles shrieked from the Thunderhawk's underwing hardpoints and blasted the door to smithereens. Kjarvik was already sprinting for it as the gunship lifted off, a parting burst of heavy bolter fire chewing up the walls around the fort's firing slit windows. "Bring them the Emperor's wrath!" voxed Aetherius as the Thunderhawk swung back into the web of tracers. Kjarvik did not reply. His attention was focused on gunning down the 2 leather-strapped greenskins that stumbled out of the smoking ruin of their doorway. More were pouring out of the blockhouse structures to either side and piling onto the walkways and straight into the storm bolter and eviscerator of Farius and Zariel. The sounds from that direction reminded Kjarvik of lumps of gristle thrown at a wall to see what would stick. He ignored them, dropped his shoulder, and charged through what was left of the gate. His vision became smoke, tangled spurs and spitting flame. The roars and gunfire merged and then morphed into the pop of cooling metal. And then he was inside. Balderich, none improved for his humbling on Pleos, was already there, power sword flashing in the dark. Flames licked the Black Templar's armor. Smoke coiled through Kjavik's beard and hair like fishbone clips. His lungs shut themselves down. His next breath drew an oxygen-poor stew of ash and explosive compounds into his multi-lung. It was the firing chamber, directly beneath the collapsor beam. Orc mechanics crowded ladders and gantries. Gretchen, wielding wrenches, ran at the space marines with hissing faces and fell to contemptuous sweeps of Balderich's blade. Automatic fire from Kjavik's bolt pistol drilled through thick orc skulls and hunched shoulders, painting the smoke with explosive splashes of red. His aim shifted from ladder to ladder as the orcs dropped down as fast as he could think. Half-second burst and move, howls and thunder, half-second burst and move. The air reeked of physoline. His ammo counter blinked a warning. He squeezed off another burst, a charging mechanic so close that its forehead almost touched the muzzle. Bad luck. He activated his power fist. There was a clang of metal on metal, and Kjavik glanced sideways to see Bohr beside him. The Iron Hand had planted his staff into the ground as if to make of himself a tripod and deploy the full arsenal of his servo harness. Kjavik made a laughing sound in the back of his throat as bolt rounds, hell beams, plasma ejectiles, and raging gouts of flame finished off what he had not been able to. The burn painted the Iron Father a harsh white, steeping the cavities of his complicated bionics in shadow as though the ancient veteran could smile again. "Fire power!" he grunted, his harness winding down, gun barrels spinning off heat. "It is always the solution." Kjavik afforded his brother in black an elaborate bow. The sounds of chain weaponry and blood-curdling shrieks delivered in an angel's voice, filtered in from outside, and vox chatter from his open channel scratched out of his gorget bead. Landers reported the safe arrival and deployment of ground troops. Death Watch sergeants requested sister or armor support, called in airstrikes, and reported neutralized objectives with coupled requests for redeployment.
"We are being made to look slow,"
Kjavik hissed, as Bohr hefted his staff and clumped heavily towards the base of the weapons generatorum housing. The Iron Father placed the charges, melter bombs just like before. Kjavik was backing up, voxing in a demand for extraction. Bohr nodded as he strode towards him.
"On to the next."
The brute shield over Gorkhagrod had failed. Maximus Thane thudded down the landing ramp of his heavy transport, leading out 73 Fist's exemplar of the 6th, 7th, and his own 2nd. Company structures had largely disintegrated, and yet the last 73 clung to that final emblem of their identity as though it were more precious than the gene seed of dawn that each warrior carried inside. From the ramp's clanging metal to solid tarmac, the Fist's exemplar poured out into the Orcs' guns, merging with similar debarkments of Excoriators and Black Templars. Valkyrie and Vendetta sorties had cleared a landing zone from a previously identified sector of relatively high topological stability. The Orcs had used it as an airbase, comprising several score parallel runways from which they had quickly been able to establish aerial supremacy over the battle for the nearby Palace supercomplex. Not this time. This time, the Orcs' fighter and bomber wings were charred wrecks on the runway or smouldering still in their hangars. Thick coils of ugly black smoke choked the sky. It was a churn of black over black, pulsed with thumping volleys from the lander's flare cannons. In anticipation of the Death Watch's success, the Adeptus Astartes dropships had wasted no time in setting down. The bulk Astra Militarum landers were still up there, however, crisscrossing trails of flak and dueling aircraft lighting up the next wave of transports. In howls of descent thrusters, the heavy landers crunched down on top of stricken aircraft. Locking clamps blew, ramps slammed into the ground, and from container after container, mortal troops emerged with a collective roar that stirred mankind's spirit to war. In such moments, Thane could see why some of his brothers saw the guiding hand of divinity behind his great crusade. Scores of regiments from worlds Thane would never know, united only by the common misfortune of having served in the last Ulanor campaign, moved up behind the Space Marine vanguard. They were slower, but numerous. Thane's suit auspex could only provide an estimate, but it was a big one, close to 100,000 men, give or take. Sentinel walkers strode ahead, combing the bordering structures with multi-laser fire, accompanied by Imperial knights. The Astra Militarum regiments were joined by Skitarii cohorts, Servitor mobile weapons platforms, and Legio Cybernetica support, emerging from their Gothic transorbitals without the cry of their base human counterparts, but with a group precision that was, in its ordered refutation of the chaos of the battlefield, just as affirming. A fleet of super-transports brought down heavier Martian engines. Baneblades pushed through the aircraft wreckage. Shadow swords powered their infamously slow-charging main guns. The last survivors of Legio Ultima, the mighty warlord Decimus Ordinatus and her escort, a battered warhound called Hellfire, bathed in purple static emitted by its intermittent void bank, made the ground shake as they advanced into Gorkhagrod. Before the great wah of the beast had begun, Thane would have called this army the greatest he had ever seen, a force fit for the command of a war master, or perhaps in extremis, the lord of a great chapter, such as Odinathus or Sakael. A lot could change in 1 year. It was astonishing to think that it was only that long ago that he had been pushing traitor remnants deeper into the Rubicante flux. No more to his flag than a handful of ships and 100 warriors. A lot had changed, and this world had changed it. Thane had been in Vulcan's vanguard ahead of a force not in the tens of thousands, but closer to the millions. A transhuman could not hear his own voice for the thunder of tanks, and the march of whole legios of titans had made the horizon itself seem to move. Ahead of him now was a heavy articulated truck with giant exhaust stacks and spiked wheels in the orcish preference. It was bent inwards at the coupler to form a V-shape, and incoming fire was spanking off the metal sides. Thane waved his command squad into cover. Brothers Kahagnis and Abbas moved to bull bar and rear fender respectively and laid down fire for the Black Templars and Excoriators that continued to pound past. Theseus pulled himself up onto the driver's cabin, turned as Thamarius threw up his battle brother's autocannon, then got down to one knee and blazed over the charging space marines. "To the palace! Fast and hard!" Thane thumped into the side of the truck's trailer section without slowing down, so hard it lifted half an inch off its near-side wheels. He turned his back against it, auto-senses taking in the mass of Astra Militarum and mechanized support, pushing up to secure the Space Marine's gains. He switched to long-range vox. "Issachar, this is Thane. Estimate 90% of forces landed, advancing towards the palace on primary schedule." Static hissed across the channel. A Valkyrie gunship jetted overhead. "Issachar!" The Valkyrie's tail wing seemed to pop. Promethium smoke spewed out of it as it dropped, corkscrewing over and over before disintegrating on impact with the ground without even so much as an explosion. A rust-coloured orc jet blasted through the smoke cloud, wings wobbling as it banked and strafed across the Black Templar's advance with twin hails of high-powered shot. "Issachar!" He gave up. He looked at the sky. The fleet must still be too far out, hence the lack of drop pod reinforcement. Fitting one boot between the solid rubber tire and the hellishly scratched mudguard, he climbed up onto the vehicle's slug-holed rear container. Keeping low, he looked across the field of wreckage and blast craters, auto-senses crowding his helm display with threat markers and tactical screed. Gun emplacements in the control towers. Orcs in heavy battle gear mustering behind pre-prepared choke points, fast attack vehicles closing in. The ground between the outermost runway and the access roads was a killing field, and the Space Marines were breaking down into combat squads to maximize their use of cover. The palace was 15 kilometers due north, a gauntlet of bunkers, tank traps, and enfilading fire zones. Dawn himself could not have done better. A frontal assault is still foolhardy and predictable, Thane had argued. Watch Commander Warfist, he recalled, had nodded sagely, prompting several others around the conference table to do likewise. It was tried once, and it failed. Foolhardy and predictable is what the orcs have come to expect from the Imperium, Corland had answered, with that strained but confident smile that he wore now most days. He had grown into his crown. Sometimes he seemed to forget that he wore it at all. Let them see again what they expect to see. To the palace! Thane stood and waved the massed army forward, just as a massive explosion blew out the back wall of a structure that butted onto the airbase. A spiked grinder wheel appeared through the dust, followed in a rattling of tracks and loose bolts by a super-heavy orc battle fortress. Battle cannons mounted on rotable turrets belched smoke, while orcs manning pintle-mounted machine guns on its rampart-like upper sections exchanged fire with what must have been the Death Watch kill teams deployed ahead to secure the flanks. Their fire discipline took out a few machine gunners and was successfully holding up the vehicle's infantry support, but it would take more than a smattering of las cannons and multi-melters to put a terminal stop to a monstrosity on that scale. For the Emperor! Thane bellowed as the first chimeras rumbled into range. Corland called the men Ulanor veterans. They proudly called themselves the Ulanor First. Thane called them Ulanor survivors. They looked afraid. They did not look afraid enough. I need you to lead the assault, brother, Corland had said to him after Asger and the others had left and they were just brothers alone at his table. Our success rests on my survival, and my survival rests on yours. He had put his hand on Thane's shoulder and squeezed. Not hard, enough to bid a brother farewell. I would rely on none but a true son of Dawn to survive long enough. Ulanor, Orbital. Corland backed ponderously into the teleportation slot. It probably did not matter which way he faced once the teleport cycle was underway, but he wanted to be in a position to monitor his squad, and in Terminator armor he was too bulky to turn around once inside. Fidus Bellator was a relic of antiquity, the first of the Indomitus suits fashioned in the closing years of the Heresy War, a gift from the Black Templars to the last of the Imperial Fists. His view of field was narrower than he was accustomed to from wearing power armor, mobility around the neck sacrificed in favor of massive protection over that area and the shoulders. What he could see, however, was virtually enhanced by the armor's adaptive auspex, augmented with outlines and false contrast, every movement of his eyes tracked by icons, brackets, and informative screed. Power was at maximum. Armor integrity was at maximum. The ammunition count to his integrated Stormbolter was at maximum. In their own two alcoves, backlit by the slow-powering blue hum of the slot's dematerializers, Beaumont and Asger were similarly, though less magnificently, clad in tactical dreadnought plate. Asger's was draped in a snowy white pelt, ritually scratched with kill tallies and symbols of luck and warding. His armor was fitted with a back banner pole from which the Wolf Lord would have flown his personal heraldry, but from which the Watch Commander had hung a swatch of plain black cloth. He wore a pair of lightning claws. Beaumont's black plate was immaculately picked out in silver, hung with prayer strips and lengths of pure white fabric bearing the Sigismund cross. Hailing from a martial tradition with a common root to Corlin's own, he was similarly armed with Stormbolter and Power Sword, the peerless sword of Sigismund already free of its scabbard. Those two needed little reassurance from him. The two Ogryns, Olug and Brock, however, had filled the confines of the teleportation chamber with their panicked odor. For all their fearsome, greater-than-human appearance, the pair had been close to a full-blown panic attack until Commissar Heliad Goss, formerly of the Minglor 17th Ogryn Auxilia, had been found from amongst the Ulanor veterans billeted aboard Alcazar Remembered and at the last minute reassigned to Corlan's force. He was in the slot between them, reciting children's prayers from memory interspersed with simple words of encouragement. They were still sweating, but were not about to rip through the conduits for a way out, which was a marked improvement. In the remaining six slots, Krul and the Space Marines of Kill Team Stalker prepared themselves for teleport in whatever manner brought them comfort. Alcazar, remembered, had two teleportation decks. The chamber itself might have been cramped, wall space bulked with slots for 12 Terminators, the floor a trip hazard of power cabling and hoses, but the technology was astonishingly power-hungry and demanded the sacrifice of an entire deck to its generators. Cavalinera's squad was in the other chamber. They were the ones that could not be risked, and due to the inevitable shipwide systems drain that followed a teleportation cycle, Courland and his squad would be on their own for several minutes at least. Krul looked up from his prayers.
Answer me honestly, Space Marine. Are you afraid? You do not refer to the orcs, do you? Said Asger.
The assassin was quiet for a moment.
No. Fear was purged from our hearts with the making of the Blessed Primarch, said Beaumont. Indeed, said Courland, as the energy brackets running through the alcoves built to lumen strip brightness, the hum becoming equivalent in volume to what one might experience by passing the bulkhead onto main drive. There was a tremor in the walls. And yet, I am terrified every time.
For some reason, the assassin seemed comforted by his admission.
Coordinates locked. Systems charged.
Shipmaster Kale's voice echoed through the chamber's augmeters like a stone dropping deep, deep down a bottomless well.
We will be powerless for up to half an hour, but Issachar has the orbital defenses well engaged, and surface scans indicate that the Death Watch have been successful in eliminating the ground-based weaponry targeting our orbit. Bulwark and Faceless Warrior will escort us in. We are ready up here, Lord.
Kulin closed his eyes and muttered an invocation to the Emperor's protection. But he did not hesitate. He could already picture in his mind the throne room of the great beast that Krul had described to him.
Commence!